Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. We are absolutely thrilled to be back for a spooky season to cover Mike Flanagan's Midnight Mass. We're going to cover the show as part of our Binge With Us series, meaning no spoilers past the episodes we're covering. Tonight, we're covering episodes 1 and 2, titled Book 1, Genesis, and Book 2, Psalms, which honestly, had to make sure that's how I was pronouncing it correctly. That P threw me off. So we are Bingetown, a bunch of hoes for the haunting universe. We covered Haunting of Hill House. We covered Haunting of Bly Manor. We know they're not exactly under that universe, but they're both Mike Flanagan. So we're fucking pumped to be here. I think we start off with how good is it to be reunited with our haunting actors and actresses? They're fucking amazing.
I'm hyped, man. This is totally what it feels like. We're about to do a haunting analysis right now. And I just want to point out that show is what got me to raise the bar in my mind of what a horror show can be written as.
Yeah.
Like, I am not going to lie. Like, I don't really like scary stuff and horror stuff. And I was a little hesitant even on Haunting of Hill House, but now that's one of my favorite shows ever. I thought that season was near perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so because it's Mike Flanagan, of course, we're going to jump right into this. But with that being said, I'm going to be viewing this with the lens of he wrote Haunting of Hill House. So if this isn't super top tier, like, I'm still just gonna be honest about it. But it was a great setup. Like, he's so good at the peripheral stuff in writing shows, like the music, like, makes is mm-hmm. incredible. The shots, like, there's always spinning shots that are creepy. He's so good at that stuff that the baseline's already off to a great start.
Yeah, it's awesome having us all back together because we can make inside jokes from like the Haunting Hill House recordings, and we will all still get it. But yeah, to go off Luke, what you're saying, I also agree. Like, I now view horror shows kind of more as, you know, it's a mystery with cool twists. See, like, who done it? It's not just, hey, watch this to get scared. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right.
Horror,
like,
done right.
Yes. Exactly. And yeah, like, the scenes and the way the writing is just incredible in general. Just how the conversations go, they seem very natural.
Oh, we'll see, though.
So far, yeah. In two episodes, it's really good.
I enjoy Rooks and Vets every time we do it, but Hill House was probably my favorite Rooks and Vets.
Yeah.
Like Kathleen said, when we did it, it was just so satisfying to have you guys, especially like you already said, didn't know if you were going to like a horror show, didn't know if the genre was going to work for you guys, and you ended up thinking it was one of your favorite shows ever. And it's so satisfying. And it was the same thing, Luke, when you and Paul, when you were Vets with me and Spartacus, mm-hmm. and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this show. And then I ended up loving it. The other thing I want to say is, you didn't know Psalm starts with a P?
No, I knew it did. Oh. I just didn't.
You didn't know how to pronounce it.
I didn't know how to pronounce it. Like, I knew, I would have bet my life it was Psalms, but I wouldn't get up on a church pew and scream that out loud. I wouldn't get up on a church pew ever. But
So let's take that real quick, because I do want to quickly speak about like the whole religious aspect of it. Obviously, it's called Midnight Mass.
Yeah.
So to be candid, I guess, I don't like religion in real life right now.
You and Riley are boys.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not a huge
fan, except he is.
I'm not a huge fan of religion and just like what it does to some certain people. But when it comes to fiction, I actually have the complete opposite take, where I actually love religion, because obviously you can take it to any extremes. You can actually start hitting like talking about gods and like the devil and stuff like that. So that's really fun to me. So Midnight Mass, like that's appealing to me. I like that shit in fantasy. I like religion. Like, it's just good in stories. So with that being said, you could just tell, like, that's going to be the vein of this entire thing. It's the name of all the, they're called books, right? Each episode's a book.
Yeah, book 1, book 2.
Yeah, I don't know too much. Genesis is just the beginning, and Psalms is just is hymns, right?
See, here's what we should say. I don't think any of us are super religious right here, so we're not going to have that knowledge. Paul, are you?
Yeah, I was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
Went to church every Sunday, so I get.
Us?
Yeah, I can. I can help out where I want to. Like, I was actually cracking up at some like the church jokes. Like Warren, when he was at dinner, he was saying like, "Yeah, like old man Pruitt, last service he held up the consecration 3 times.
Jingle the bell 3 times.
Yeah, I felt like an idiot. I was like laughing at that. I was like, I don't feel like an idiot too.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot of things that go over my head. Like, they talked about like positioning in the churches, like thurifer and acolyte. I was like, okay.
Obviously, we know altar boys and everything like that, but, and I know what acolyte is from other things, but
mm-hmm. like when he said to fill the crew, it's, I was like, I recognize them. Didn't know that's what they were called.
So I would actually say I'm the opposite of Luke, kind of. So I was raised Catholic. I'm not religious at all. anymore. But I actually stray away from religion in TV shows. Like any Criminal Minds episode that were religion based were my least favorite. The season of Dexter that was religion based was like my least favorite.
I think it was most people's least favorite.
Yeah, that might have just because it was bad.
Yeah, that's okay, why so, I was saying you wouldn't like Last Kingdom probably because that's I enjoyed a lot, but it is a lot based on religion.
I will say it's so nice that it has this Mike Flanagan reputation and our actors and actresses because I was never not going to watch it. But if this was an unknown name and unknown act, I probably would never click it. I just can't. But I mean, I really enjoyed the first two. Interesting enough, like very slow burn to me, which is fine. But there's only 7 episodes in this series versus there was 10 in the, I think 10 in Haunting, 9 in Bly.
Yep.
And so 7 is, they got a lot of ground to cover in 5 more episodes. Yeah. But what'd you guys think? Hot takes.
I was going to say hot take. I really enjoyed these first two, even though it was pretty much all set up. Like Bly, first like 2 episodes, all set up. And I thought Bly dragged real, real hard in the beginning.
Really?
For some reason. Yeah. I don't know why. This one, I loved. I thought it was good. Maybe just because I got some of like the church jokes and stuff like that. And
that can't be.
Finally, someone's making church jokes.
Yeah, yeah. I've been waiting.
Paul's been waiting for church jokes.
Yeah. I don't know. I loved it. Yeah. I think it was the writing and just how they gave the little bits and pieces, and you didn't really get bored. You know, 20 minutes into the first episode, we get this young guy carrying this trunk into, you assume he's, you know, Father Pruitt or whoever it was. That was like 20 minutes in and we didn't even really know anything.
Yeah. I mean, if we know one thing about Flanagan, it's that he can intertwine very good character development, character stories and actual stories with the horror genre. And really, the horror genre hasn't come into play too much so far in the first 2 episodes. Paul, if you want to go back to the Hill House, I guess there was a couple creep counts here with the glowing eyes and stuff. But
I did, yeah. I started the creep count a little bit, but it kind of fell off just because it was more story.
But yeah, the first 2 episodes were definitely setting us up, letting us get to know the characters so that it's like MTV Scream when they say you need to come to love the characters so when they die, it hurts.
Uh-huh. I love when he fucking says that.
Yeah, me too.
So when they die, it hurts.
It hurts.
One thing I love about it, I'm not going to say that the first 2 episodes were like fantastic, amazing. I'm telling everybody about it. Did not have any real complaints about them, though, either. It's just a normal opening to a story that's going to get concluded 5 down the way with, you know, they did a great job with showing some of the relationships between different characters. But one of my favorite things about it was it's in the middle of the first episode. They're talking about how the oil spill destroyed the economy and a couple months or years down the road, it ended up destroying the population. So the island went from having hundreds of people to dozens of people. Yeah. And that's powerful because what that does is it lets you get to really, there's not that many people Paul Hill is Father Paul.
Yeah.
Father Paul's leading the church. Even on the packed Sunday, it's like there's not that many people.
Oh, yeah.
That was hysterical. Yeah. He's turns around. So glad to see so many of you here today. There's like 12 people. Mm-hmm.
Going back to that really quick, that's got to be awkward because he has that scene where he's like, why don't I see you guys every other Sunday? And if you go to normal church, like say it's in our area, church is so packed, quote unquote, that the father's not looking directly in your eyes.
Yeah.
But he's literally talking to everybody that he knows and they know it too, which is so awkward.
Well, let's just talk about this town setup. It's truly my worst nightmare. This is absolutely my worst nightmare, living in this small town, like so religious based, not many people. And then the people that are there are super judged. Like Bev is my worst nightmare.
Oh my God. Bev is the worst.
And shout out to anyone who like follows her. Of course, she was in Hill House, but like, I feel like she's so typecast because in Grey's, everyone hated her too. This poor girl, I want her to get something good where she's not hated. But I can tell she's going to be great, especially like in these series. Mike Flanagan loves a monologue. So many good monologues. I'm so fucking pumped for the monologues to come. And we had a few good ones already, but I'm looking for like the intense ones. Like remember when Dudley in Hill House gives that long monologue that's like chilling? All those kinds of stuff.
Well, Father Paul, he did it for me at the end of episode 2 when he was just out there preaching. Mm-hmm. But let's quickly just go over the characters that are casted in either of the Haunting or Bly shows, because we have Mrs. Dudley, who plays Dr. Sarah Gunner.
Yep.
She's Gunning. The doctor. What? Gunning?
Gunning. I think.
Gunning. Google cut off at G-U-N-N. So,
so
I
guessed.
I could have sworn in my notes I had like gun. I don't know. Whatever. Gunna. Okay. Then we have Erin, who plays Theo in Haunting of Hill House.
Yo, baby girl is back.
She's amazing in Bly. I won't even talk about that. It's a spoiler in itself.
Yeah.
We have Henry Thomas is Flynn here. Ed Flynn. And then he's obviously the uncle in Bly and then the father.
Let me pause you there because it was really cool that this time, around this time last year, we're waiting for Bly and we're talking to Henry Thomas. Mm-hmm. And he was
talking about Midnight Mass.
Talking about Midnight Mass, saying, "Hey, I'm on schedule. Let me make sure I'm not filming right now."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. And he
so
was telling
cool.
us a little bit about it, and we're like, "All right, well, we're gonna cover it as soon as it comes out." So it is cool that
he did also say in that interview that he's not like a super super main character in Midnight Mass, and is a little bit of a more side character, which I feel like I've gotten that he wasn't that in episode two, and the dynamics between him and Riley seem like a heavy thing in episode one. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
Did we miss anybody else? Who else is in?
So Bev is Steven's wife in Haunting of Hill House.
Okay.
And
the drunk, town drunk.
Joe?
Yes. Yeah. Dudley is Joe with Collie, the dog. Yeah.
And
Raul Coley.
I was going to say.
Raul Coley, the hottest hot boy of all time, the sheriff.
He's the best.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, sheriff. He was Owen, right? Okay, that was his name in Bly Manor.
So I was a huge iZombie fan. I'm obviously a huge Bly Manor fan, which he's British in both. And he's in this episode, and I'm looking at Alex, my girlfriend, and I'm going, what is this accent he's putting on? Like, I can't tell. It's like a very specific U.S. accent. I go, oh, fuck. It's just American. Like, I forgot that he was British for a second somehow. I was like, what is this accent
he's
putting on?
Dude, it was distracting, his American accent. Yeah. I was just so wanting him to speak British.
I know, because he's so hot.
You could hear his British accent come through at some lines, right? Like, you guys catch
a
that?
A little bit, yeah.
There was, like, two scenes. One when he was talking to Joe at the end of two, and one kind of towards... I think it was like his first introduction, and like there would be one or two words that would slip, and I'm like, "That's Owen, that's our boy."
He's the chef.
Okay, so while we're covering the characters, the mayor, Wade Scarborough, his wife is Dolly, daughter's Lisa. Lisa was a big character, so I can't believe you guys didn't recognize this.
Oh my God, you're so cocky.
Yeah, it's gonna be like, I haven't even seen it.
Pissing
sorry.
Me off.
Now you're looking at the actor.
How I Met Your Mother.
Yes, it is.
Let me look at him then real quick.
It would have to be that if you're acting all like...
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, dude, how we made you watch How I Met Your Mother. You crushed it, so...
Yeah.
Kathleen, you know, you get a pass because you probably didn't...
I watched it all in like very, very...
He looks completely different, but Jimmy and Luke, a little...
Literally, I'm typing in mayor from Midnight Mass, and it's showing the
mayor.
Mayor. It's showing the father.
Mayor of Bly.
Oh, he's the one with the mustache, right?
Yep.
Robin?
God.
Does Robin date him?
Yep.
Yeah.
He's Nick.
He's the dog. He's the dog. He's Scoobs.
That's Robbie ML.
It's Nick, the daytime chef. He's like super hot and super dumb at the same time. He's season 8.
Does she call him down to look at his abs in the bar?
Yep.
Okay.
They really made him look older in this.
Yeah, they did.
Like,
holy shit.
Unrecognizable, honestly.
Perfect segue. Mrs. Dudley, a.k.a. I can't remember her name in this.
Dr. Gunning.
Dr. Sarah Gunner. her mom is definitely a young person in old people makeup.
Yeah, 100%.
1,000%. So and I'm wondering why they're doing that, because it's a flashback
episode.
I'm not looking it up, but it's definitely, like, soon as I saw her, I was like, that's a young person in old people makeup.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Her name's Mildred. So definitely an old person's name, but you can tell.
Oh, okay. So now we're good, because that's what I Googled and I saw. And I saw a young Mildred, but it was her. So it's just her, not in old makeup. We're good.
We know that she's going to be a character because she's seeing in certain parts like the younger father and saying, I saw him in the window. And, you know, so I'm guessing there's going to be a flashback.
Well, I thought that was different. I thought that was specifically she was seeing the yellow-eyed monster outside.
Yeah, me too. But I'm saying she knows the father when he's
father
younger,
Paul.
So I'm guessing they're going to show us Pruitt at one point when he's young.
Okay. Honestly, my guess was, is this man's Pruitt as a young
that's what
father?
I yeah. am still I yeah. don't know why that is that wrong definitely
well no. I said it to Alex, who I was sitting next to, and she was like, I feel like these people have been in this town for so long they would recognize
100% I agree with her. Say also, they show a picture of a young Pruitt at one point
in the very beginning of episode one,
and it's not him.
It doesn't need to be
He's scary in himself. Just his regular face is spooking me.
Just to go off that. So Sarah in episode two, she says, you know, Father Pruitt, he's been around. He used to stare at me just like that.
Yeah.
Like they said he was on this island before, like anybody can even remember.
Yeah.
So in that sense, you know, people might not recognize him because you have to be super old, like Mildred, when she does see him. Well, first of all, when he goes in to do the mini mass for Granny Mildred, she looks up and says, like, oh, John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you go, no, no, this isn't Pruitt. This is, you know, Paul Hill or whatever. Yeah. And he makes a funny joke where he's like, oh, like, we can see where she gets the mistake. Like, we have the same tailor.
Yeah. No, I think it's still on the table.
It's on the table. Yeah.
And I also, if it's like a, if they're going to take the approach of like a whole, like, if there's some sort of ritual that he is now doing to the island that's going to like kill, I don't know, something where he's like using it, he can put his soul in a different body. It doesn't need to be the younger version of himself.
The thing is, at the end of that scene, he says, like, oh, Millie, to Mildred. So calls her Millie, nickname that he's never heard anybody say before.
Yeah.
See,
and he looks like he's about to cry.
Paul, what you just said about them being like, he's been on this island for as long as anyone can remember. Maybe like no one has ever seen him that young because he's always just been like that age or something. Yeah. Like, it's like he's been around for hundreds of years or whatever it is. It could be anything.
It's like Sloat at Marple Newtown High School. It's this teacher that's been around. He's looked the same for 30 years.
Literally taught my dad, who's like 30 years older than me. But no, I mean, like, that's only, it's definitely,
it's on the table,
still on the table that it is him.
So, okay, let's get into final theories for episode one and two at the end, because I have a question for you about that.
Okay. So let's kind of talk about the show. So we haven't even talked about Matt Saracen, aka Zach Guilford. I mean, for the Friday Night Light fans out there, QB1 is the hottest hot boy of all time.
He's killing
I mean, I had seen the trailer for this, which had that Somewhere Only We Know song on it, which was such a weird choice, but it worked somehow. Like, it was they like try to make it creepy. It was very interesting, but I kind of forgot everything about it. Like, I watched it once and was like, I don't want to analyze this trailer. I want to like, so I was not expecting him to be like kind of the town pariah. I was not expecting him to have killed somebody and be in jail.
Yeah.
I love the visuals of that girl with the like glass.
That's typical
the,
Mike Flanagan.
It's hot. Yeah. And but yeah, so he kills somebody in a drunk driving accident, and then he goes to jail. We get a 4-year time jump, and then we're kind of introduced to his younger brother and his friends that go to the Upwards and to go smoke lit. And then there's a bunch of cats.
Smoke up.
Which, of course, we see all wash up dead. But yeah. I love the part where Warren mentions like the stuff that does wash up from the Upwards. And when they kept mentioning the Upwards, I couldn't get a sense of like what kind of an area is that? You know what I mean?
I think when they do like an overhead view at the north side of the island, there was like a little island by itself. And they kind of like, you know, what's the sail? Jesus Christ. I was going to say like boated, but I was like, that's not right. When they like paddled over there and then paddled back. So I think it's just at the north of the island. As you were saying, anything that washed out of the Upwards ends up getting washed onto the west bank of the island.
So what I was saying is the Upwards just kind of like an abandoned island, or do people live there? Is that like where people
live?
They said that people used to live there in the 1920s. They would bury their own dead there.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And then they're making the joke that the cats were eating the dead.
Right, right, right.
And that's
they
how they were
up.
Fed. Mm-hmm. But then Warren was like, I actually live in the area where it gets washed up. It's just bones that are getting washed up.
And
casual.
At one point, the mayor says, like, the Upwards haven't like flooded out that bad in so long. So I think it's been like pretty deserted for a long time, especially since they said like, hey, this is a generational thing that we do, sneak out and smoke. So if they were doing that when Riley was a kid, I assume it's been a while since anybody inhabited that place.
Do we have any kind of time period here? Is it like Matt Saracen, meaning Riley, his bedroom has Seven poster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Seven came out in like 97 maybe. And we know that he leaves.
They do Shark Tank references, so that's like 2000s.
I mean, we know that he leaves the island, goes to Chicago, turns into a big dog and stuff, and then he has the accident. Then there's 4 more years, so he could just be like, what, a little bit older than me, maybe like
35
or something.
Yeah.
So it would be present time.
Yeah.
I was gonna say on the bumper of his car in like the opening scene, it's a Jesus fish. I don't know if you remember when the Jesus fish was huge to put on the back of your car, like, you know, early 2000s. Maybe it was later 2000s. But there's also something else where at one point the mayor, the Scarboroughs, talked to Father Paul and say like, oh, like it was really good to hear the old translation. And that's talking about the church. The church a few years ago, it must have been around like 2010, maybe even like 2014 or something like that. they retranslated all of their prayers and a lot of verses in the Bible and their Psalms, and they made it more modern today. So that's what they were talking about.
Right.
That's like what the, instead of peace be with you and also with you, it's not like,
and with your spirit.
And with your spirit. Spirit.
Like, that's what's funny, because like to me, to us that we say that we don't practice as much anymore or not at all, I remember only the old stuff that I learned when I was little.
So that was another reason actually why I thought that Paul Hill, Father Paul, was really old Pruitt.
Wouldn't that be a point against it? Because Pruitt was there forever. So well, he would have always been doing the old, I mean, the new stuff. I just think that like Pruitt's the guy that they all knew forever. And he was the one leading all the church ceremonies. And like, if they're saying that there's a switch, I think that's a point against it being Pruitt. But at the same time, like, I just think it's supposed to be a red herring, right? I can't tell if Flanagan's doing that on purpose to make you think that he's supposed to be a younger Pruitt. And then obviously he's going to throw some wrench in it. I think that's more obvious. I mean, more likely than it to actually be Pruitt, because
I hope it's
you shouldn't be able to predict the whole ending right now.
All right, guys, let's take a quick pause here because I have something I want to talk to you about. Spooky season is here and we couldn't be more excited. If you're anything like the Bingetown crew, then I know you're craving some spooky content. Movies, TV, podcasts, you name it, and we'll try it so we can fill our spooky needs. Well, one thing I personally have never really given a chance to are horror books. Well, I'm ready to jump into some juicy horror books, and I have just the book for us all, The School Bus by Richard McCrohan. On one tragic October day, a school bus on its way to a third grade field trip filled with children becomes involved in a horrible accident along a lonely mountain road. The loss of life is terrible and sends the town into a tailspin. 10-year-old Jimmy, I like that guy's name, Jimmy Freeman, and his four friends have heard all the stories and rumors of that horrific event and want to go and see the site for themselves. But there are some things that are better left alone. The School Bus by Richard McCrohan is a terrifying ghost story in the vein of Stephen King and Stand By Me. Available on Amazon in paperback and ebook, or on audiobook at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. The School Bus by Richard McCrohan, if you dare. And Kathleen, I know that you are a huge Stephen King and Stand By Me fan, so I think this is the perfect book for you.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the first two creep counts. Okay, so I don't remember exactly which one comes first, but we'll talk about the island slash the Upwards first because we were already talking about it. But we have the scene where they're all sitting around the campfire smoking that good stuff, and then it is cool that Warren says, you know, I'm not gonna drink because of Riley. So that's like,
I didn't put that together.
Yeah, he won't drink but he'll smoke, but the whole Riley thing, you know. And, you know, they're looking around. You see the glowing eyes all over the place from the moment they get on the island. Mm-hmm. And then when he does the little move of the flashlight, you see something move, like an actual monster thing move. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me so much. It's like so subtle. Did you guys ever watch Signs, the movie Signs?
So long ago.
M. Night Shyamalan. Okay, so when that movie came out, I was pretty young, but I saw it in theaters. And, like, well, the biggest thing about it to me is, like, it's supposed to be this scary movie about aliens. And for most of the movie, you never see what they look like, you know, and it's like so subtle that there's a scene in Signs where someone catches it on a family video, like it back when you're actually using camcorders for a family video. And all it does is really quick walk across the screen, and literally the entire theater screamed. Mm-hmm. Right. And all it is just a quick glimpse. And usually you need like something to pop out in your face or some huge monstrous thing to actually scare you.
Yeah.
But the little subtle thing where you finally see what the monster is, it like gets you and you're like, oh shit. So that just reminded me of that. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I was going to say I say that all the time. I was just going to say, but it has to be a Mike Flanagan thing because they did it in Haunting too. It's exactly what you said. They scare you by not having something pop onto the screen. It's something that's already on there, the screen that moving. You didn't realize.
Yeah.
And then once it moves, you're like, oh shit.
That is true horror. That's freaking me out. Yeah, because there's one scene, right? It's isn't it when in Haunting that is when
Nell.
It was probably when Nell's sleeping, right? And like she goes to bed after freaking out, and the dad runs to the room and she walks out, and then the thing is in the closet. It's
the bent neck lady is behind her in the shadows. Yeah.
Yeah. Something
and
like that.
It pushes forward and you see it was there the whole time.
Yeah.
And like the other thing too is the scene with Nell and Steve. When Steve walks in, Nell is there the whole time in the back as the ghost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he's on the phone and then he turns around and like he didn't know she was there the whole time, but we did. And we're just like, what the hell's going on here? Like those kind of subtle things.
But let's talk about the monster.
I was shocked by a monster.
Mm-hmm. I kind of liked it. And I hope it is a monster.
Yeah, that's fine. That's new. Monster is new, right? Because Bly wasn't a monster.
Well, yeah. No. Not really.
Ghosts, monsters.
The first two are ghosts.
The cursed lady, but we don't want to give any spoilers.
Well, wait, because creep count for me really is when the storm hits and Riley is chasing the tall man in the hat outside. Yeah. I was like, that was the first time in episode one where I was like, yes, yes. Like it was, like I said, slow burn, not very many intense moments, but I'm like, it's obviously not Pruitt. We've said he's 80. This dude is running for the fucking end zone.
If this was a lesser horror movie or show, and I was waiting for it because that's what I'm used to, he's chasing this guy in the rain and you can hardly see anything and then he disappears. I'm waiting for him to turn around and to be right in your face with a pop scare, but that's not the right thing to do.
No,
but
that
I was waiting for a jump scare right there.
That was good though.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing I wanted to bring up with the monster, and you were already talking about Pruitt and Father Paul, is the second creep count you get is when Father Paul brings in the trunk and then he knocks and it knocks back. Mm-hmm. So what's, you know, is the monster what he brought? Like what's in the trunk? Is Father Pruitt in the trunk? Like it's open later.
Well, the first thing he does is unlock it. Like at the end of that scene, after the knock, he unlocks it. And then Beth comes in, thinks it's old Pruitt, reaches down and like the trunk is open.
Yeah.
So right now, that seems like where they're pushing us. But like what Luke was saying with, you know, is Father Paul actually young Pruitt? It's like it almost seems too obvious.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. Like is Father Paul bringing the monster in the trunk? Is he bringing Pruitt? That's the thing that.
Okay. So the monster has the ability to clearly mimic voices perfectly. So are we for or against the idea that this thing can shapeshift and be something? Like, can it be a person?
Yeah, totally.
Because then that changes the entire game. And that's what this whole show could be about, right? But like, because if it is going to be a person, then we have to start tracking, like, when did we last see somebody confirmed? Because when was the scene with the chest? How early in episode one was it?
I went back and double checked because I wanted to get a good timeline. Mm-hmm. That was before the Warren and Uker and Ali went to the upwards to smoke.
Okay, so that's the first creep count.
So, yes.
And I went backwards.
It's so early. Then. Yeah.
So it matches up. So
if he lets it out, then it makes sense.
Then it would be there in the upwards to eat all the cats.
Right.
Because that would have been like the first night technically or whatever.
But didn't they say that Pruitt had been like sleepwalking and doing stuff before he went to the mainland?
So the thing that I'm going to keep calling him Matt Saracen, man.
Yeah,
the
Riley.
Thing that Riley sees, whether he was hallucinating or it's the monster shape-shifting or whatever, what he sees is what people were saying Pruitt was doing before when he was sick, quote unquote, because they said, like, you know, he's out at midnight sleepwalking with his hat on and shit, like, you know, and you can't not recognize that hat. So
wait, I just had a click in my head.
Do it.
He was out at midnight. Is that why they call it midnight mass? Old dude Pruitt goes out and gives a midnight sermon to nobody. Sorry, I cut you off.
I like it, though. It's good.
No, but what I'm saying is, people were getting used to him sleepwalking, and we don't know. Is like to what you're saying, Luke, is he shapeshifting? Well, he could have shapeshifted into Pruitt for that one scene, if that's who it is. Or again, we don't know enough yet.
Sure. Yeah.
So we should just cover what happened with Pruitt, why he's gone. Is like you guys were saying, he was really old and pretty much going like senile. So they wanted, before it was too late, for him to go and visit the Holy Land.
Right.
So that's why all the church pitches in and he goes to, I guess, Jerusalem. I'm not really sure where. And, you know, walks where Jesus walked. And then that was supposed to be like their like good deed to him before he, you know, gets too old and dies. So.
Because they say he never left.
Yeah. He's been there forever.
Yeah, the crock pot or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Crockett. Is that what
it's
called?
Like they call it the crock pot.
Okay, cool. So, yeah.
So, I mean, that's cool because we find that out. He leaves the mainland for the first time. Everyone was already getting the impression that he's going senile. He's going a little old. Only the mom is like the one defending him, being like, no, you're overreacting, over-exaggerating.
Riley's mom?
Yeah.
She's so cute.
Yeah.
She's so funny.
She's a good mom.
She, dude, the way she, like when she was walking in the ferry and Riley was getting off and like she was blowing her nose and then put the tissues up her sleeve. I was like, that's such a mom, old mom thing to do.
Yeah. Wait, but because I feel like we'll forget it just while we're on her. What do we think is up with her being able to see now?
Same thing with Lisa, right? The like the they're healing.
Oh, okay. I didn't even put that together that wow. he's healing. He healed her too.
Oh yeah.
I was assuming like every, for some reason, whoever's on that island was just slowly becoming healed. I don't know if he's like targeting people and fixing it, but because like the mom never felt like the father Paul targeted her out in the one conversation. But that was my guess.
Yeah, makes total sense.
Is that
sense.
Connected at all to her? I really couldn't guess what was going on when the mom sees the blood before Riley walks in at the end of episode two and on her. It was just blurry
with her glasses on. And then she takes her glasses off and it's clear.
Yeah, but why was she bleeding?
She just cut herself.
She was doing that. I missed that.
The blood's not relevant. The blood is only as a device to show.
I totally thought it was going to be somehow connected to Aaron bleeding at some point too. But I guess it was like, no.
She was on the crockpot luck banner.
Yeah,
she was the heart of that festival.
Yeah, I feel like we're jumping a little bit, but like when it comes to her, my theory with like Lisa and her, and you were saying like the people are healing, like. Whether he's meaning Father Paul is the monster or not, or if they're two separate entities, I still think there's obviously something sketchy about him. Is there some kind of power? Like when things die, when certain things die, does their like essence or their life go into other people and heal other people? We know that all the cats died. We know the dog died. And now we know that Bull's probably dead. You know, are we using their lives to heal other lives?
Oh, that's good. I like that.
That is a good question.
So, I mean, in that vein, if they were going to go that path, then the real Father Pruitt could be used to have imbued this young priest, whoever this guy is. I don't know. There could be something there, too.
Is the monster doing the priest's bidding to... Paul's doing a little dance over there? Let's see, what is it?
One and two came together to make three in my head. It was crazy. So the cats, when they were eaten by the monster,
they
got all their blood sucked out. Yeah. I assumed the monster did. So he didn't eat it. He just wanted the blood. Do you think that whoever goes to church gets healed because they say body of Christ?
Yeah, and he puts it in the wine. I was thinking that too.
Then that would check out. That would check out because Lisa's always there. And what's her name? Annie.
Yeah, the mom.
The mom is always there too.
That's what I was thinking as well. Like
that's awesome.
The blood of Christ, and he's putting it in the wine. And
well,
yeah.
They focused way too much on the blood of Christ
especially
thing. Like
because
that was just,
they don't do that anymore, really. Like normal, I'm pretty sure normal mass, you don't get.
Lisa loves that fucking wine, baby.
Yeah, she's like, I get to drink up finally.
Yeah, they definitely focused on that part of the ritual every single Sunday.
Is if we start to see in episode 3 or even 4 that the older lady.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Get better. Yeah.
Millie does, because he went to her home, did the little mini mass kit and pulls out the wine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, that's pretty dark wine. Maybe it was just straight up blood.
Yeah.
If she starts getting better, then it's like, all right.
And again, there's probably something to the fact that you have to be coming to church and getting it often, not just like one time and you're healed. You have to be devout and getting it consistently, and then you'll start to be healed.
You know what? If this wasn't, you know, it's going to be a fucked up show. Father Paul's a good dude. Like, he's doing the AA for Riley. He's doing making the house call. He knows all this stuff from Pruitt, because I think they're going to be one and the same somehow. If he genuinely just really listened to Pruitt and came back to this town and was like, hey, I know you like this, and then you went through this, and I'm here to help. Like, this would be a pretty fucking
He's super charismatic, and he's great when he's on the screen. Like, even, you know, when he's doing the AA meeting, like, that was a great, great scene. I will say Riley owned him, but after getting owned, just the way he delivers lines, it's always contagious to, like, just, you're gripped by him.
In that scene, I thought it was phenomenal. It was the beginning of Riley just going off, and Father Paul is like, well, it's safe to say you aren't practicing anymore, right? Just like the little stutters, like the little bit of awkwardness introducing himself in the beginning to like everybody. I thought his actor was amazing.
Yeah, he's acting his ass off.
I would like to rewatch episodes 1 and 2 with the idea in my head, watching him every time he interacts for the first time with somebody, because we do know that certain times he kind of acts like he knows them, and then he goes, oh, wait, I learned about you from Pruitt. Is it more like, he did learn about him, like you're saying, Kathleen, or is he already know it?
Yeah, right.
And I would like to rewatch that just to see if there's anything, because Paul, you calling out the Millie thing is like the biggest one, but there may be other ones that we missed just because we're not thinking about it.
So I was thinking about when he does have Riley go to AA and they're talking this. It was before that, I guess, like at the potluck when they're on the bench, and he was like, "Oh, well, you used to be an altar boy, right?"
Yeah.
Like maybe, you know, like he said, he learned it from Father Pruitt before that or whatever. But if it is actually him, like if it is younger version of Pruitt, I was just going to put the theory out there. Totally could be wrong, but the one picture of Pruitt and Riley when Riley was an altar boy that they showed in the beginning, he didn't look too happy in that picture.
Don't say it.
I was going to say.
Used to be an altar boy, right? Wink.
Yeah. Well, at the AA meeting, Father Paul brings up, you know, you used to be an altar boy with Father Pruitt. He goes, I don't want to talk about that right now.
That far back. Yeah. He doesn't want to go down that road.
And he deflects to, you know, talking about religion. So I was like, I don't want to enforce the stereotype. But is this Catholic priest molesting his altar boys or something?
Is that going to turn into like that's why he was drinking so much?
Well, that and also like as soon as the cop was talking, whatever, he's saying a hail, whatever, he's saying a prayer. So he was obviously religious up until that point. And then he's like, well, if God exists, this ain't it.
Yeah,
like,
it was in jail that he said he threw away the Bible on the first night. He read tried them all, every though. Single religion and And he just couldn't find anything.
We got to just talk about Erin because she's just amazing. The best. Like, I just don't know how with an island like this, there's like 20 people. How if you're Riley and not every second of your life are you not revolving it around making sure that she likes you and you're going
to. Well, apparently they
banged.
Yeah. Like apparently you're supposed to think they're together or something.
Totally.
If I do a really good job, can I make that baby mine?
That's a really good job. I was thinking this the whole time, ever since they like first saw each other and reunited. She was looking out the window to see him coming home. I was like, you guys are obviously the two most attractive on the island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just kiss already. Get it over with. Mm-hmm. You know, we're waiting 3 episodes in. Well, getting into episode 3. Still haven't seen it yet.
She is definitely the character, besides Riley, I think is the purest to trust. Like, I don't think has anything to do with the evilness.
Mm-hmm.
They could do something with the baby that could be like a, you know, like I mentioned, now that I'm in on the blood thing, because I love that idea.
Yeah.
Also vampires. But like, if her bleeding could mean anything more than her having to make that random trip to Dr. Sarah's,
right?
Like, is there something that's gonna, maybe this thing wants the blood, right? Like, that's gonna be the reason that this monster's attacking her, could be part of it. But
that's actually exactly what I was thinking. Like, she was spotting or whatever, and the monster got like pulled to the scent of blood, and that's why he was outside of her window or whatever.
Creep count.
Yeah, no, I think that has
the way
to...
you're just chilling in that house when that's when she thinks she saw something.
Rewatching too, because I rewound or rewatch it again. The eyes are there from the very beginning, like we were saying. Yeah. It doesn't move, and then 5 seconds goes by and it moves. You're like, whoa!
Yeah. Well, she has. I feel like we're gonna obviously get some kind of reason why she even came back in the first place, because we find out that her mom was awful as an alcoholic. She had a pretty shitty childhood because of her mom. No reason to really come back. She's literally just like, "Hey, I'm back, and I'm." In the shadow of my mom, everyone thinks I'm her, blah, blah, blah. Like, it doesn't really seem like there's a good reason for her to be back. It's not like there's any family there to help her raise the kids. So we're going to find something out there. When it comes to the monster, too, that was creep count number whatever, 3 or 4, when it's on the roof or it's up in the second floor and then it's outside.
It jumps off and you can hear it hit the soil.
Yeah. The other thing we have to talk about with this monster, too, is that we get the POV of it flying and then landing in the shack where Bold goes in.
That was a crazy scene.
Yeah,
that looked
so
like
it can fly.
It looked like it was over a, what are those called when you do like a smaller version of a town or
like
of
a miniature, just like a,
a
model?
Yeah, a model. Yeah,
like a model version of that. Like the visuals of
that
was so
was,
crazy.
Honest,
right. I guess so. But
or a drone.
I was thinking the same thing. That was like that, the swooping and
cool.
The accelerating and dropping.
I wasn't expecting
that scene happened in episode 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was like that needed to a shot like that needed to happen earlier, because I didn't really grasp what they mean. It is so isolated, this island. You can't see anything. They have, I think they mentioned it a couple of times. There's 2 ferries a day or something like that.
Yep. Hell yeah.
And it's just they are so isolated. How the hell could you grow up there?
I'm glad you brought the fairies into it, because you know me and my goddamn numbers. Whenever I see numbers, I freak out. So I was looking.
The freaking dumbwaiter, man.
Yeah, the serial number on the dumbwaiter. So I was looking at the sign that they focus on in episode one. You know, there's two fairies. The two fairies are the Bay Breeze and the Island Bell. The Bay Breeze is the one in the morning, the Island Bell's at night. It focuses on the sign and it says, you know, crossing time, approximately 1 hour and 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, now we have an actual timetable. So I'm waiting for this ferry to come back into play later on where it's like they're in a time crunch in that 1 hour, 10, yeah, whatever. Sure. Like, we'll explain, oh, if like you were crossing here, how'd you get here in time if you were in ferry? So I'm waiting for that to come back.
Yeah, sure.
But that's going to be nothing now because I made a big deal.
Yeah, because you made a big deal. But that is actually nice notes, because I do have a feeling that could come into play more than the dumb waiter from Haunting of Hill House.
Switching gears a little bit to a few things, specifically in episode two, we start with the cats on the beach. And I'm looking at these cats and I'm like, where have I seen a cat look like this before? Like this dead cat. And I was like, oh, fucking Hill House, when Cheryl has the little cats. Yeah. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? And
Flanagan then, has no problem killing animals.
No, man. And then Bev, when she's doing the rat poison, that's also a huge thing in Hill House. You know what I mean?
So, okay. Alert. I mean, you did want to talk about a couple things. We can, because I want to talk about Bev, too.
Yeah, we need to talk about Bev, because she is, I know she's going to be an incredible character. She's someone you love to hate. She's Ramsay Bolton.
She's the real monster. We keep saying the monster.
Yeah,
they probably think we're talking about Bev.
So, let's just start with the idea, like, it's obvious that Flanagan wants us to think that she poisoned Joe's dog Pike and killed him. And
I think
that's pretty confirmed, right?
Yeah.
So what's the, just to show that she's just like an evil bitch, like, do you think she's going to be in on whatever Father Paul's secret is? Because it looked like she was still shocked at his appearance when she walked into his house.
Mm-hmm.
So like, she could either be dead and replaced, or like, what? She seems like the type of character that would jump all in if this was hypothetically like the devil and he was like, I'm in, and she'd be like, all right, let's get it.
I hope we get like a brutal, amazing death for her. Like, no offense. Love her.
She's definitely the type of character that if Father Paul is bad, that he could just use, I'm a priest, you listen, and she will worship him and do whatever he says.
Do his bidding.
Do his bidding. But I mean, like you said, she's evil. I'm under the impression that she poisoned the dog. We have the big scene with Riley explaining that she pretty much sandbagged the entire island, saying take the money from the oil companies that caused the big issue.
The settlement money, which Riley explains really was in a huge benefit of the oil company, because they took the settlement money, but they didn't realize how they weren't going to make any money because of all the dead fish now. So that's why people are leaving the island, because they took the settlement money. They can't
sue. You take the money and she makes you, not makes you, but tells you pretty much, hey, donate it to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then Riley's already putting the seeds in our head that she's pocketing extra money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if she's necessarily going to be anything that has to do with the monster. She just might be awful.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
And well, I like that, too.
All right, guys, one more pause here, because I have another book recommendation from our new friend Richard McCrowan. We've been talking about all the religious content in Midnight Mass. And Luke, I know you said you're a big fan of religion and fiction, so I think this one will definitely interest you. Salvation Mountain. College professor Jeffrey Cole and his three student assistants travel to the deep backwoods of the Appalachian Mountains in northern Georgia to do research on Father Divine, a rural preacher that 100 years ago created a fanatical religious cult that overwhelmed and murdered the mountain people in the dense backwoods of Salvation Mountain. But they find that the zealous fires are still burning strong and that the wages of sin is death. The novel Salvation Mountain by Richard McCrowan is available on Amazon paperback, ebook, and also in a powerful audiobook on Amazon Audible and iTunes. Salvation Mountain by Richard McCrowan. If religion is the opiate of the people, then this is the crack cocaine.
One crazy theory that just thought of, because Luke was saying, like, oh, can the monster take appearances? Like, what if she goes into the house for the first time when she thinks it's Father Pruitt? She dies there. And, you know, now
he could be a plant.
The monster is just acting as Bev for like the rest of the show. And killed the dog because scared of it or something like that.
Are there any, I mean, maybe, but.
Well, just real quick. So Bev, like, she had to kill the dog because they show somebody in a skirt going down, giving the dog a hot dog. The dog eats the hot dog.
Yeah.
It dies. Bev is wearing the same skirt that they show you giving the dog the hot dog.
I think it's it. I don't think that's a red herring. I think she killed the dog, and that was so fucking sad for me. Dude, I was depressed for just a hot second.
That with like,
I don't know, but dude, that was rough for me. Yeah. I was like, fuck this.
Those were real tears, man. Yeah.
It was rough.
That was rough.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
But the good thing about Bev is that we're not getting any kind of like people thinking she's actually good, but she's not. I mean, even the sheriff goes to Joe later and he's like, listen, you're right. I know you're right about Bev, but we can't prove anything, and you're the town drunk, bro.
I trust Joe, by the way, too, very much. Yeah. Especially after the first scene when he does tell Sheriff that when he was blacked out the night before, he told the sheriff that he saw this huge monster with wings like
a giant albatross is what he said.
Yeah. So, and he didn't remember that, but like, I do trust him.
He can fly. So
he's going to be a key part at some point in the season. I just don't think that he's going to be evil.
Dude, anyway. It broke my heart when she was taught. Well, first of all, when his dog died, Pike died. Yeah. That was incredibly sad. And then later on, when he is talking to the sheriff, Hassan, and saying like, everybody thinks I'm crazy, whatever, like I thought this was going to go this way, I thought like Bev was going to get away with it. At the end, the sheriff is like, hey, I don't think you're crazy, you're right. And Joe just like takes 3 seconds and is like, thank you, like, oh my god, you're like the first I was like, oh my god, poor Joe.
Yeah,
that's why like his one buddy Bull dead gone.
Well, we haven't even talked about the fact that Joe's the one who paralyzed Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
That was just complete new information when we got it there, right?
Yeah. So I had a note that said something's up with Lisa and Joe, because there was a scene where Lisa pauses, looks at Joe and is like scared of him. And I was like, what the fuck's that about? Yeah. And then, I'm surprised they straight up told us in like basically one episode span. They were like, there's an issue here. Here it is. Yeah. Type deal.
Which is probably going to be some story to that, too.
It has to be. But I just didn't understand why Riley like use the words he used, saying that it wasn't an accident or something. He was just shooting to kill.
He was drunk and he just wanted to shoot.
So that's seeming like not what I had in my head is the idea of where Joe was going to go. Cause if that's the case, then like, he's just pure evil.
What if he was like drunk late at night?
Definitely.
And he was shooting just to shoot, is like what Riley was saying. What if he was drunk and didn't remember that he was shooting at this monster, missed, and then like hit Lisa or something?
It's truly like they were like, he was hunting, and then Riley was basically like, he wasn't hunting. He was just like, he's just shooting target practice. You know, I took it as like, it's still an accident, but he shouldn't have been shooting there. He wasn't shooting at something. He was just being a drunk idiot and shot Lisa. That's what I took it as. I still think Joe is pure good, even though he did a really bad thing. Kind of like Riley is pure good, even though he did a bad thing.
Yeah.
Katie Siegel as
Aaron
is perfect.
Yeah, she's the best.
You're good, perfect.
But quick comment on what you just said there, Paul. Are you saying that you think that there was a chance that the monster has been there longer than just having shown up?
I'm just throwing shit out there, honestly.
I'm in the mindset that there was no monster before the beginning of episode one. Like, it doesn't seem like this was like a haunted island or there's legacy sightings of monsters or anything like that.
The only thing that gets brought up is when the cats happen. Yeah. The mayor keeps saying like weird things have happened before and we got through it.
Let's talk about that too, because that's the opening scene of book two, Psalms. And I don't fucking trust the mayor at all.
So annoying.
Dude, so sus
in this scene.
What the hell was he doing? Was he just tweaking out? Like, what the fuck was that? How he was talking? He brought up, he said 19 years ago. Or he said in 2002. So I just assumed it was 19 years. Yeah. So I guess whatever it was, he says a huge swarm of starlings just dropped dead in the air for no reason. He said that twice within that scene. And he was just being so like deflective, trying to get the sheriff to just start talking about other things rather than burning all these cats and doing the right thing that you should be doing sanitation wise. So I don't know what it is, but maybe it's all of the Scarboroughs that are just, there's something
besides
weird.
Our girl Lisa.
Yeah.
I agree. Something was up. I took that as like just a small tiny town mayor trying to like hold up appearances and being like, nah, this is fine. Like back in the day we had starlings, you know, I kind of took it as stupidity rather than evilness or like sketchiness. But I mean, I agree that family, there's obviously something up. Like even Lisa going to church and being so like in awe all the time, like
every single day. Yeah. And it not always even being her parents going with her. It's the mom of Riley that brings her in most of the time.
Because they're the two most religious in town, like besides Bev, obviously.
And Ed is, though, right? Is Ed not? Because, okay, I was just not expecting the second conversation that Riley's dad has with Riley. I thought he was total, just full religious. If you're against this, you're against me, basically. But he was very different in that scene.
I liked that Ed at that table was like, can you shut the fuck up? Like, you literally killed somebody and you're just like shitting around at this table. Like, you don't get to just come to this table.
Your mom literally is taking you back into this house.
Yeah, like, your mom goes to church and prays for you every single day and you're not going to go to church with her. Fuck you. I agree with our boy Henry Thomas, and then I agree that he was singing almost a lighter tune in there, but it's interesting because I mean I still go to church on Christmas and Easter sometimes, and I still take communion when I do, or like when I have a wedding or something. I grew up Catholic, so I still take communion. I love
the communion.
Yeah, me too, it tastes so good.
That just sparked an idea in my head too. I mean, maybe it's going to be very important that Riley's dad, Ed, is telling Riley, don't take the communion. So he's going to be one of the only people in the entire town that's not drinking the blood.
Okay.
That could totally be something there.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Because that is a thing. Like, in if you're not actually Catholic, if you haven't done all your sacraments, you're not supposed to go up and get it.
Ooh. And Erin is pregnant, so she's obviously not drinking the wine. So it's both of them.
I'm pretty sure she is. I'm pretty sure I saw that she does.
I can't remember.
Damn.
I don't know.
Obviously, she takes communion, but I would have to confirm. That would be a good theory, though, if she's not.
Yeah, because those two would be the only ones being like, what the fuck's going on this time?
Yeah, these crazy bitches around here.
Yeah, as well as dead.
All right, so obviously, we're getting close to wrapping up, but we didn't even really talked about the little brother. Like, do you think the little brother is going
to
be a main character? Or do you think it's...
Yeah, he has to be, but at the same time, it's like, do I care yet?
No, I don't.
He's not through two episodes at all.
Yeah. I liked him in the first one. I thought he was kind of funny.
Just
I thought
because he smokes.
Smoke I like up. Anybody who smokes. No, just like the way like Uker was like, oh, you fucking invited Aladdin. He was like, dude, give him a chance. Like, Warren's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a good kid. Yeah.
Yeah, like he doesn't drink. He's obviously sneaking out and stuff like that. But what are you supposed to do in like a population of 127 people?
I like Ollie more than I like Warren, just that based off that one drug dealing scene where he was like, fuck my dad. And he was funny because he, as soon as the sheriff walked out of the room, he just like jumped on the phone real quick and he's like, 10 minutes. I don't know. I like him. I like him more than I like either of the other two guys as of now.
I mean, I did think it was funny too that they're saying that Ollie is going to narc and then the other friend starts telling Lisa, yo, you want some of this shit? The religious girl.
Yeah.
I mean,
she
does say like, I don't want to smell like cat shit, which now after seeing two episodes seems very like off character for her to say since she's so like religious. And
I
like,
also remember her on that porch being like, oh, she's cool. And then the rest of it being like,
yeah, like it's weird. Like that one scene is different from everything else you see from her.
And then Warren loves her, right?
Yeah, totally.
That's the vibes I was getting. And he was definitely falling in love with her. But Sheriff Jr. And his dad like praying at the end. And then when he goes to bed, and says, like, kiss your mother.
I like that.
Was that not the cutest thing?
Talk about, like, Kathleen saying it's her worst nightmare being in this small town. Literally, the mayor is going to the sheriff saying, yo, can you, like, come to our church, even though you're not Catholic, and just and you know, sing a little bit. And it's like, bro, no, I'm not Catholic. Like, why do I have to do that? You know? But you feel like an outsider, like, crazy.
Especially them. Why did they go to that town? Why would you save yourself?
That's what I was going to say. We learned that he is new, relatively new. How new? We don't actually have a timetable, but that begs the question, what happened to the old sheriff?
True.
Did he get murdered? Is he just old? Did he retire?
Did they mention anything about
him? No, that was something that I definitely listed as going forward. Whenever they talk about it, I'll be excited. Also, to go into like how small the town is, sheriff's office like had the jail cell in it and it was in the back of the general store.
Yeah,
so it's like you don't get more like small town than this.
Yeah,
it's insane.
He's like, oh, you're breaking into the police station. He's like, you're breaking into the general store. But
I left that Joe's like, and you locked me in here all night, and he just gets the gate and just
it's wide open.
And he's never locked, bitch.
So before we hit up final theories and everything, let's just really quick list everything we know so far about the monster here. So we've seen it a few times. We know it has the glowing eyes. We know it has the form of a body and it's big.
Why are you saying we know it as the form of a body?
Because we see it. Like I'm saying,
Riley chases it.
Like I'm saying, you see it as
top hat man is the
No. I'm saying that when you see it, it's a monster. You see something. Like, it has a body.
Oh, it has a body. Yeah. I thought you meant, like, a human body. Okay, okay.
At the end of two, it seems to stand up.
Yeah,
and be
it's
like,
huge.
Definitely a creature at the end of two. When
It has...
cat glowy eyes.
But wait, can't we then confirm that if the thing in the haunted in the house, the abandoned house at the end, stands up with the yellow eyes and is the monster, like you see it, that thing was the thing walking outside of Aaron's house? And wasn't it also in a normal human body at that point?
I can confirm.
It walked like it was,
yeah,
right?
But when it walked away, like when it kind of like turned in the first scene that you see it when Warren's looking at it, and it reminded me so much of Signs. That's why I said it. Like it has the like two legs standing up kind of form.
Okay,
yeah. So two legs confirmed.
But bipedal. Otherwise, what we know is that we saw it attack the cat and it breaks its neck.
Dude, I cried.
No blood left. Perfectly mimics whatever you say. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know. You'd have to confirm for me, when the father knocks on the thing, does it knock exactly the same way?
I went back and checked. It paused a little bit like it did at the episode two, and then it knocked in the same, you know, two knocks afterwards. So
it mimicked the knock. It mimics Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty much all we know so far, but we do know that if we see Bowl coming up anytime,
sus.
Does the fact that it was conscious enough to knock, is it just speak to its mimic ability, or does that speak to it having some sort of cerebral past a creature?
I'm wondering what the deal is like when it comes to, now we can start getting into theories, like what the deal is with the mimic thing. Like, is it going to mimic shapeshift wise? Like,
that's what I'm leaning
towards.
Did
you guys watch the HBO show?
I think the shapeshifting thing could totally be where Flanagan's going this whole season. Like, who is the monster? What's really the monster?
Mm.
And it could be freaking someone, you know, it could be like the mom at the end or something like that. Who knows?
I typed in HBO monster show and Sopranos comes up.
Let's go.
No, the one with Jason Bateman, The Outsiders.
Don't spoil something. Go watch it.
It's not a huge spoiler, but it is kind of a spoiler that the point is that there's a monster that shapeshifts.
Mm-hmm.
And is it going to be something similar to that where it's taking the body of people that it kills so that it can infiltrate the town like a Skrull in Marvel? Or is it just not very intelligent and it mimics just because that's all it can do?
Yeah.
Like, what are we getting from that? You know, I mean, we don't really have much. We know it can fly too. We didn't say that yet. Or in my list, I didn't say that. I mean, that's really all we know.
I mean, I feel like we beat it to death of thoughts on it with the related to the blood, related to Father Hill. I don't have anything else to guess on it yet.
Me neither.
So my only thing is, I figured when Father Paul was knocking on the trunk, that was him saying like, oh, like we finally made it. Like, I'm going to let you out soon.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as that's better than a beast, than an animal,
so like
I guess you could say.
That's another weird thing, because we're saying that Father Paul could be a younger version of Pruitt, but that would just be separate to the monster, because we kind of already know that they have to be two separate entities.
Yeah.
So is there two monsters, or is the father going to be a totally different thing? Like, the father brings a monster, but he's something otherworldly himself. Like,
it's a good freaking
again,
question,
first two episodes, we're not going to know much.
Yeah. Unless it's Bev.
Yeah. Should we do a bank kill Mary with 127 members of the town?
We'll do one eventually.
I mean, there's not much to work with, but
we'll see, because right now I don't think we know them.
No, I was just kidding. Yeah. We're definitely not doing one yet.
The only other open-ended thing that I had here is just that we've been hinted at is just what's going on with Riley's vision. I know you mentioned, Kathleen, you do. It's the classic, you know, ghost kind of always being in his vision thing that Flanagan's good for.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about her.
We did.
Oh, real quick, but like we never went back. Never gave you guys my nickname for her.
What is it?
Which was Robin Sparkles. Because literally when I see her, I just, the glass, and it still has like the red and blue
lights from the
off, and it just looks like sparkles all over her face.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm like, oh, Robin Sparkles.
We'll see her every day.
Her actual name was Tara Beth. Get that out there.
Nah, her name's Robin.
Robin Sparkle.
But what's the deal with him being in the ocean in the isolated boat by itself? Because we've seen that in each episode. Yeah. That's like kind of the last thing. That's going to, I'm sure, going to be a later.
Sees her too. It's like always like back to back. He sees her and then he like, you know, has that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, is it symbolism that he just feels like he's by himself because he did what he did and now he comes back? And like Kathleen said, he's the pariah and only really Aaron and his mom like him now.
Yeah. That's what I was getting. He's just like alone by himself on this little boat in this vast ocean with no signs of land anywhere. Right. He's just like, he's a stranded, basically.
Yeah.
Can't escape.
Couple ending questions I just wanted on the board here. So, all right, I guess we'll just round table this. Is Father Hill Pruitt? That's the first question. Second question is just give me something on the monster that you want to stick by and just have it be your on the board thing. And then third, will Riley and Aaron ever kiss?
Third, yes. 1,000%.
Yeah. Riley and Aaron.
Like, do you know that based on the trailer? Or do you just
no,
say that?
No, I'm saying that.
I'll put money that they do more than kiss.
And okay, the first one's kind of easy. It's just like a yes or no. I think that they share some sort of connection. I don't think it's a one-to-one. I don't think he's literally him, but I think that somehow he embodies him. I can't commit to that he's fully yes. Yeah. So I'm going to live in the gray, baby.
Yeah, Kathleen took the words out of my mouth. My answer is no, but it's kind of in the middle. Like, I do think there is some kind of connection, but I don't think it's actually him.
I'm going to say it is him. I'm going to say there's some crazy thing where during his trip, he actually goes and, like, gets his youth restored somehow. Because he has at least a semi-recognizable face that Millie would recognize. And also, I didn't say this earlier, when they're on the bench talking about getting the AA meeting, its own chapter on the island, yeah. Riley is saying to him, hey, have you heard anything about Pruitt? And he's like, oh, he's okay. He's doing all right. He's still bad. But, and then he goes on to say, I can tell you that Father Pruitt isn't going anywhere anytime soon. Yeah. And I was like, is he talking about himself? Is he not going to leave the island anytime soon? Yeah. So for that, I'm going to say, yes, he is the same person.
I am with you. So it looks like we're an even split here.
Two, yeah.
Yeah. If he ends up being Pruitt, you guys owe us shots.
Okay.
For the record, I'm the one who said it first on the pod that he's Pruitt. So I kind of
so get only I get checks. To do
Jimmy does shots for all of us.
And yeah, Aaron and Riley are gonna kiss.
And the monster question.
Yeah, just give me something on the monster that was talked about throughout this podcast that sticks with you that you think is true.
He is circumcised.
I think he's uncircumcised.
I definitely think he's uncircumcised.
Is he Jewish or is he not?
That's
Jewish?
Why, dude. Yo, it's Catholic Church, dude. As soon as that monster was born, Father Pruitt was out there chopping that shit off.
Father Pruitt, like what young if... Father Pruitt.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna say that Father Pruitt is the monster.
Okay.
Nah. Okay. Oh, so you're saying Father Paul and Pruitt are separate, and Pruitt's the monster. That's what you're saying.
Yes, but there's still a connection between the two. Obviously,
I want to say similar. I want to say that there's the connection. Father Paul brought the monster. The monster does his bidding. So when he needs the blood for the wine, the monster does it for him.
Sounds like Carnival Row, maybe.
We cover Carnival Row on the pod, man.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm just all in on it being a shapeshifter. So I think that there's going to be points in this season where we're talking to characters that we think we know, but they're dead, and it's actually the monster shapeshifting.
It's sad to say that this episode's ending, but the best part about it is we get to watch two more now.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say, last thing, if you could choose one character that you think is going to die, who would you pick?
Bev.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm saying Bev is going to die.
Bev, no, that's a good one.
No the repeats. Mom.
No.
Oh, Annie? Is that
she doesn't
her
deserve that.
Damn.
That's why she'll die, though, because she doesn't
stay
it.
She's getting with healed.
I already have mine.
Who is it?
For some reason, I got real bad vibes that the sheriff's son is going to die.
Yeah. Aww.
Sarah's going to die, the doctor. I don't think
Aww.
She's there. She's Sarah fucked Dunning. Because of her mother. I think.
Yeah, bury your gaze. He would never bury his gaze.
Actually, that literally might change my mind.
Yeah, that's totally. Just, yeah. Shout out to my gay girl.
Really quick, do you think there's going to be something to the fact that we're getting a consistent mainland visitor because she's the girlfriend of the doctor.
So like Dr.
An
Sarah's
outsider
girl.
Visiting often to be somebody that isn't affected or something by the
Maybe.
Island.
Because she's kind of like, what's going on?
I just
here?
Think
you
it's a weird. Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing that they bring her in, except the fact that she's saying you didn't get the hell out of here pretty much.
I don't know.
I don't really have any. I didn't think about that at all.
Got to wait a little bit. Yeah. We'll talk about that next episode if we see her again.
But yeah, Sarah's going to die. And if not, I was going to actually say Father Paul, but I think that's a cop out. I think he's screwed. There's no way he's living.
Ready to rock? That's sad. Okay. So like we said, we're going to cover these two at a time. And then the finale will have its own episode. There's seven episodes. So we'll do it in four. We're sacrificing not binging this all at once so we can record these every two. So it's kind of torture, but it's fun to theorize and makes it so I don't binge it all in one day. Mm-hmm. But that's it. If you like what you heard, give us a follow on Bingetown TV and Instagram, Twitter. Check us out on our website, bingetowntv.com. We cover Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor. If you haven't listened to this whole thing and heard us say it 80 times and mention it, we also cover a bunch of other stuff. So check us out and we'll see you next time. Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.